Okay, we're holding on. Yud Ches Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing on this topic from the previous Mishnah about when we believe somebody's taina, when we say a pesha also a pesha hitu, when we don't, Mishnah says, Ha'edim she'omru k'sav yadeinu huzeh, if Edim say on a shtar that was brought to Beis Din, now, so a person brings their shtar to Beis Din in order to be mekayim. You need to verify that the signatures on it are valid. And there's different ways of doing that. One is that you have other Edim who recognize their signatures, one is that you compare their signatures with others, and one our Mishnah is talking about that the Edim themselves come to Beis Din and say the, and say whether this is our handwriting or not.
Only if there's a problem, if not, you've got to stick to the later
problem. Actually, we'll talk about in the Gemara, whether the case is where you should be Mekayim Yishtar no matter what. But yeah, normally it would be when there's an issue, yes. So the Edim are coming and saying that Ksav Yadeinu who's there, this is indeed our signature, Aval Anusim Hayu, but we were forced to sign on it. And we'll talk about in the Gemara what do we mean they were forced. And therefore, in other words, they're saying that the shtar is not really valid. Ketanim Hayinu, or we were ketanim, we were low by mitzvah. So La Edus Hayinu, we were possible to Edus. Either that we were, either were relatives, or were Mesachik Bekovia, were gamblers, or whatever the different Sula Edus. Harei l'nemonim. Then we believe. Harei l'nemonim. Well, so right. The thing is, there's two different ways of looking at whether if they're saying that they're psula edus, then it means that they're effectively declaring themselves rishayim by doing that. They're declaring themselves we're gamblers or what have you. If they say anusim, we'll talk about in the Gemara whether they had a right if they're honest to sign on the shtar. We'll get to that. If they say they're kanim, that doesn't make them rishayim. The real issue is we say we believe them because, again, it's a pesha also a pesha hitu issue. It's a pesha also a pesha hitu. They're the same ones, in the same breath, they're saying this is our signatures, therefore the shtar should be valid, but there's circumstances over here and therefore it's not valid. V'im yesh edim shu ksav yadam, but if there are other edim, that this is their handwriting, or shal yesh ksav yadam yoytze b'makom acher, or their handwriting is available from someplace else, meaning that they sign on another shtar also, which has already been certified by Beis Din, which has already been muchzak, and we're comparing it, which is another way of validating the signatures, and in them one, and then we don't believe them because then we don't have a pesha also a pesha hitu. And we're not believing them to say that we are apostle. The Rambam describes there's five different ways you can certify the signature. I don't think I remember all five of them, but let me see. You can have the Edim themselves testify these are our signatures. You can have other Edim testify that these are their signatures. You can compare their handwriting with another document. And then there's two others that I don't remember just now. But
Handpicked
Zebar Leachad, et cetera, Zabla
Basin? Have a handpick on the star, that's another key.
Oh, okay. Okay, but if there's a handpick on, okay, but that's not really saying that's effectively saying previous Beis Din or this Beis Din or in previous sitting or whatever validated that the star is good, yeah. Anyway, so the rest of them are not negaya right now, but.
So if they bring Edim to confirm these signatures,
then we don't believe these
don't
Edim.
Believe the second Edim?
No, we don't believe the original Edim who said that we signed on it invalidly. Because that's fine. We don't believe the first set of Edim who say that we signed on it invalidly because on the basis of what are we supposed to believe them? First of all, who gives you the right to pass all the shtar, as we'll talk about in the Gemara? And second of all, you're declaring that you're Rishayim, at least in the case where they say that Sula Edus. Or certain cases of anusim.
Maybe the Edim from the signatures didn't know they were Rishayim.
That doesn't matter. The point is they say this is their handwriting. Based on those Edim who say this is their handwriting means the shtar is valid. You want to claim it's invalid, we need more than just your word. This that the Mishnah is talking about, where we say the second half of the Mishnah, where we say that if we have another proof of their signature, then we don't believe them to say that they're psula edus or whatever, or that they're anusim, is if they say anusim hayu machmas mamon, we were honest because of money. Meaning, basically, the guy who the malver who's written in the shtar, for example, threatened us. You know, nice business you got there. Shame if anything would happen to it, as the famous expression goes. And therefore, we were afraid that we were afraid of a financial loss. And therefore, we signed on this document. Now, what does that mean? By saying that, they're declaring themselves rishayim, because the din is you're not allowed to be matzil atzmei mamon chaveri. You're not allowed to save yourself at the expense of somebody else's money. What gives you the right to say, because I don't want to suffer a financial loss, therefore I'm going to cause this person who's written in the document as a loiver a financial loss? You can't do that. Therefore,
but when it comes to the fascists, you're allowed to save yourself even if.
Wait. We'll talk about that now, and we'll talk more on your testament, Aleph. Wait. Right now, we're talking machmas mamon. By saying machmas mamon, they are declaring themselves rishayim. Well, a person, we don't accept a person to say ainot a mesim atzmei rasha. A person is not able in basin to declare himself a rasha. In the first part of the Mishnah, you would say it's a pesha asa, a pesha hitzer. That's a special situation. But in a normal situation, we don't accept them to say that they're rishayim. In the first half of the Mishnah, what we would say effectively is because of the specialty of a pesha asa, a pesha hitzer, we would say what's called pagdinin dibura. We would divide what they're saying. We would say sort of that we believe you to say it's your handwriting. We believe you to say that there was some kind of onus and that therefore the shtar is possible. We don't believe that you did it. We don't believe that you are rishayim. We don't believe that what you're saying, that it was the kind of onus that makes you a rasha. But in the Sefer, we don't have that. But if they said we were onus because of nefashis, if the guy threatened to kill us, then we believe him, because then they're not making themselves rishayim. Amalei Rava, kol kamine. Rava says, still, can you believe them on that basis? The din is, kivin shehigid, shuvein echazer magid. A general rule in Hilchas Eidos is that when someone has said Eidos, he's not allowed to retract and contradict his previous Eidos. So if these guys are already signed on the shtar, that's the equivalent of one deposition of Eidos. No. Again, we're talking the Sefer of the Mishnah, where there's other. They signed the shtar last week, and we have independent evidence that this is their signature. When they sign that shtar, at that point, that's considered to be a giving of evidence. That's considered to be a deposition. Now they're coming to Beis Din and trying to contradict themselves. You can't do that. Pasuk says im lo yagid, which implies there's only one time that you can give Eidos. On any given matter, you can give Eidos one time, then you can't contradict yourself. The Chitema,
they didn't know that.
It doesn't matter. Beis Din is not supposed to accept a second statement from them. If they said a certain thing in Beis Din, they can't later on go and then retract and say, you know what, we were lying or whatever. Yeah. So you might argue, okay, that's talking about with verbal Eidos. Avol b'shtar lo, maybe it doesn't apply to Eidos written in a shtar. The word is im lo yagid, after all, so maybe it only applies to Haggadah, only actual speaking. No. V'omer shlokish, Eidim achasumim al ashtar, when witnesses sign on a shtar, nafsa kemish nechkara Eidos in Beis Din. It's considered as the equivalent of their Eidos having been checked out, having been cross-examined in Beis Din. It's actually, this is really when the shtar has been niskayim, when the shtar has been certified. But in this case, it was. Other Edom came, or we had another signature of theirs to compare with, or whatever, so we're certifying it on that basis. All of a sudden, these guys are coming and saying that, you know what, this Edos, this effective Edos that we previously gave that has been validated, that was cross-examined by having the shtar validated, now we're saying it wasn't true. You can't accept that. So even if it was on Nusim HaYinim Achmas Nefashim, how could we believe him? So no, rather this statement of Rami Bar Chama is actually the distinction between Machmas Mamon and Machmas Nefashis is actually referring back to the first part of the Mishnah. When we say Harelu Nemanim, the case of a Pesha Asa Pesha Hitir, where we don't have any other independent evidence of the validity of these signatures. They themselves are certifying that they're their signatures, but they're also saying that we were honest. So on that, this is only if they're saying we were honest because of lives, it was a matter of sakonas nefashis, which then again they're not declaring themselves rishayim. And in Toch Kedei Dibur, Rashi makes a point over here of saying that not only is it a matter that they're not making themselves rishayim by that declaration, but because they're saying it was machmas nefashis, we had a right to do it, although we'll talk about that soon in the Gemara, but also they're doing it all by Toch Kedei Dibur, which it seems then, it comes out from what Rashi is saying, that this idea of a pesha asa pesha hitir would apply only if it was one continuous eidos, besides kedei dibur. If it was afterwards, maybe not. Not everybody agrees with that. There's a lot of other rishonim who argue that a pesha asa pesha hitir is a special situation, and you can accept the second claim even long after the first one.
That's
as long as we're depending for everything on what they're saying.
How long?
I don't know. As long as but they're saying that we were onerous because of money, that he threatened our business or whatever. Because a person doesn't declare themselves a Rosha, and we don't say this idea of Pogunin Dibura. We're not going to split up what they're saying, that yes, there was an onus, but no, it wasn't the kind of onus that makes you a Rosha. No, we just, even with Hapesha Asa, Hapesha Hitcher, we can't accept that kind of thing. Tananabonim. This that we're saying in the Mishnah, the Mishnah is just saying a Stam Mishnah, that we believe them in the first case where they say they're anusim, if it was Machlas Tefashas, or Ktanim, or what have you, we believe them and we pass all the Shtar on that basis. We say the Shtar doesn't have valid witnesses on it, well, then nothing doing.
We don't have to tell them they have to bring Edim?
No, they themselves are the Edim signed on the base thing. If they're claiming anusim in a Machlas Tefashas, that's what we're saying. Because a Pesha Asa, a Pesha Hitzir, and because they're not declaring themselves Rishayim, then that's good enough for us. Tosis points out, by the way, that with all of this discussion over here, we're talking about over here, are we accepting what they're saying based on Migui? Now, Rashi had mentioned the other day that the concept of Hesha Asa Hesha Hitzir is really an extension of the idea of Migui. Tosis said not. You can't accept Edus. You can't accept Edus that's only acceptable because of Migui. That's not Edus. And therefore, for example, if they say, for example, that we were anusim machmas mamon, we don't say, well, you have a Migui, you could have instead said you're anusim machmas nefashos, and then that would be a better claim. Because you can't have Edus depend on a Migui. An Edus has to be actually what they say. You can't start dinging with what they could have said. So that's the thing. So we're saying we accept a Pesha Asa, a Pesha Hitzir,
right.
But we're not accepting it on the basis of Migui. We don't say if you made a weaker claim, we'll accept you Edus because you could have made a stronger Edus. That's not how these things work.
I understand, yeah. But according to the question of Tosfos, then when do we say that Migui is a valid argumentation?
When it's the plaintiff or the defendant making a claim, then you do Migui with that. You don't do Migui with what the Edim are claiming. So this that we're saying in the Mishnah, that we take it as the Mishnah just said as a Stam Mishnah, that in the first case we believe the Edim and we say the Shtar is possible, this is actually a Machlokas. Turn it up on. In them on the post, they give it a Meir. A Meir says that in fact we do not believe them to pass all the Shtar. Whereas the Chachamim say we do believe them. Our Mishnah is according to the Chachamim. So, Bishleim the Rabbanon, Kitamayo. Okay, we understand the reason of the Rabbanon. Hapesha Hitzir. El Rav Meir Maitama. Why would Rav Meir not accept their Eidos and say the Shtar is possible? So let's consider the different possibilities. Bishleim Sule Eidos. We can understand if they themselves are saying that we're Psule Eidos. The reason is we're not going to accept that because it goes against the Chazakah. We can assume that the Malva himself is going to be careful to begin with to make sure that he has valid Edim signing on his Shtar. The whole point is he wants Edim on his Shtar so that he can collect with it. He's going to make very sure in the first place that his Edim are kosher Edim. So if they're trying to contradict that, they're trying to claim that they were Psula Edus, and Psula Edus, remember, doesn't have to mean that they're Mesachas Bekovias in Rishayim, that would be a different issue. Even Psula Edus could mean that they're relatives. But still, the Malva knows that if they're relatives, the whole thing is going to be thrown out by Beis Din. So he's going to take care not to do that. We have a chazaka of that. These Edim are coming to contradict that chazaka. We can't do that. Ketanim Nami, similarly, if they claim...
Edus can just come in front of Beis Din, claim you will not come. I know right away.
Well, I mean, in this case, Krovim Hayinu doesn't mean necessarily we're still Krovim right now. It might be we were Krovim and then somebody died, yeah.
In the case that it's not
recognizable,
right.
Ktanim Nami, similarly in the case if they claim that they were Ktanim, also we can understand why Rav Meir would throw out their claim. Kedrim Shem and Lakish, like what Rish Lakish says, Amr Rish Lakish. Another Chazaka, Chazaka Eina Edim Chosman al Ashtar, Elim Ke Nasa Begadol. You have a Chazaka on the Edim themselves, that they're not going to sign on the shtar unless it was done by adults, and the reverse is also true, that the gedolim who are arranging for the shtar to be written are going to make sure that the edim are not ketanim. So again, it would be going against this chazaka. El anusim my time. Why would Rav Meir say that you don't believe them if they're anusim? Amr Rav Chista, because Kasavar Rav Meir, Edim Sha'amr Lahem Chismu Shekav Al Tehorgu, because Rav Meir holds that if you have Edim who are told, sign falsely on this document, and if not, then you'll be killed, Yehorgu Val Yechat Mushekav. They should be willing to be killed rather than sign falsely.
They will accept to be killed. Ah,
so what do you mean? Or is it they will accept, or is it they should accept? So there's Some of the Farshim explain that yes, we know normally there's as the Gemara is going to say, you have the big three, you have a Zorah, Gilad, Ayis, and Shvichas Damim, that you should be Motzei Nefesh for, nothing else. There are Farshim who explain, based on this Gemara, that no, Rav Meir would add to that Gezel, that you have to be ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh for Gezel, and signing falsely on a Shtar is a type of Gezel. Other Farshim say no, Rav Meir doesn't mean that. He just means people consider it such a disgusting thing to do, to sign falsely on a shtar, that people will voluntarily go on, that people will, if a person were to say, you know what, I couldn't stand the pressure, I went and signed on it, everybody would consider him a lowlife. And people don't do that.
So what do they do then?
Well, that's the thing, according to that we're saying. So Rav Meir is saying that if they said, we signed on the shtar falsely, where he threatened us and we signed on it, Rav Meir is saying, we can't believe them because effectively, they're declaring themselves Russian for Shayim by that, either according to the first explanation, because they should have been Motzei Nefesh, or according to the second explanation, because the average person would be Motzei Nefesh in such a case. The average person would consider it a vile thing to do and wouldn't do it.
According to Rav Meir.
According to Rav Meir, that's what we're saying.
We're talking about according to Rav Meir.
We're talking about according to Rav Meir, yeah.
Right. In other words, they're questioning themselves.
Yeah. And therefore, so they're making themselves Rishayim, and we're back to the problem, you know, to make them out of Russia. Amale Rava, Rava says, wait a minute, Hashta Ilu also the Kamon Le Mluchi, wait a minute. If these prospective Edim were to come to us to ask a Shaila, so and so is threatening us, if we don't sign on a Shah, he's gonna kill us. What should we do? Amrin Amlahu, what would we tell them? Zilu Khasim Bulai Discathlon. Go sign on it. Don't allow yourselves to be killed. You're not chayav to be Motzei Nefesh on anything else. According to the Rambam, you're not allowed to be Motzei Nefesh on anything else, in fact. The Rambam writes, we've discussed this before, that a person is Motzei Nefesh on any except for the big three, or B'shat HaShvad, he's mischayav b'nafsha. He got himself killed for nothing, basically. The Eibishter is gonna get him for having effectively committed suicide. Tosfos holds that not. Tosfos holds that in a few places, including over here, that you're not chayav to be Motzei yourself on the other one, Motzei Nefesh on the other one, but you don't have to. So if the guy asked the Shaila, if these Edim asked the Shaila, we would tell them, go ahead, sign. So what are you implying? That now that they sign, we're going to tell them Hayitachen, and how can we believe you to say that you signed, you're a Rishayim? We ourselves would have told them to do that. Ella, no. Taimer did a Meir to Rav Huna, Amar Rav. No. Rav Meir's reason is... So we reject that idea. There's no idea that the mayor holds that you should be Motzei Nefesh. No idea that people would be Motzei Nefesh. They may or may not, but that's neither here nor there. The fact is, people may be machmer on themselves. The pshutei am may be Motzei Nefesh on these kinds of things. But the halacha is you don't have to, or according to the Rambam, you're not allowed to. And therefore, there's no reason we should consider them rishayim if they claim that. Rather, the reason why Rav Meir says his din, even when they said it was an oinus, is based on what Rav Huna says in the name of Rav. If somebody admits that he wrote a shtar, then you don't need to certify it. At that point, we don't believe the loiva to say that I paid it. Once the loiva himself says, Once the loiver himself says this was a kosher, we don't even do a pesha also a pesha hitzer in that case. In other words, if the loiver himself says yes, this was a valid shtar, but I already paid it, we don't accept that. We don't accept the pesha also a pesha hitzer in that case. Because we would argue to him in that case what they're doing in the malva's hands. If you already paid it back, he should have returned it to you. He should have ripped it up. The fact that it's not, that goes against your pesha also a pesha hitzer. Same idea over here. What are we talking about? The case we're talking about over here is actually where this is how Rashi learns, that the loiva himself admits he wrote the shtar, Now, he might also be admitting that because of an oinus. That's another matter. But he himself is admitting he wrote the shtar. Well, good. At that point, we don't need these edim anymore. There's no apesha also, apesha hitzer. When we ask them, is this in fact your signature, we don't need them to really to say that it's their signature. Even if they said it's not, the shtar is still considered valid. So no apesha also, apesha hitzer, Rav Meir says. If the loiva says he wrote the shtar, yeah. Tosfos says a little differently. The same way as we say that we don't, the same way as we don't allow the loiva to pass the shtar, we don't accept his claim that when he claims that the shtar is valid, but I paid it back or something else. Similarly, by these edim are a very powerful thing, but they're not powerful enough to pass the shtar according to the mayor. Once they say that this is our signatures, then we don't accept them. Rav Meir says we don't even accept that there was a reason why these signatures are invalid.
Similar to the loiva,
yeah. So according to Rashi, we're talking about the case we're talking about over here, the loiva himself admits. According to Tosfos, it doesn't matter what the loiva is saying in our case. The point is the edim themselves have said this is our signature, and unlike what we said before that we should say apesha al sapesha hitzer, the mayor doesn't believe in that in this case. Gufa, getting back to what we said, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rav, voida b'shtar shekosvei en tzerach l'kaimer, that if the loiva admits that he wrote a shtar, then you don't need to certify it. So Rav Huna had said this in the name of Rav. Amalei Rav Nachman, Ganuva Ganuvi Lomalach. Why do you have to steal your way in to say this? Isvir Lach Kira Meir, Ema Halacha Kira Meir. If you hold the Halacha is like a mayor, just say straight out the Halacha is like a mayor. Now, Rav Meir is a yachid against the Rabbim. Usually the Halacha wouldn't be like him. But fine, you want to hold the Halacha like him, at least say so explicitly. Don't make it sound like this is something everybody would accept. Amalei, so Rav Huna says to Rav Nachman, Umar Hesirle, Nu, obviously you disagree, so what do you hold? Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, very simple. Ki also come on the dina, when two people come in front of us to a din Torah, Amin and Lahu, we tell them, Zilu Kaimu Shtaraihu, first go be Makayim Yashtar, if the Edom aren't around, first go be Makayim Yashtar, Vuchosu the dina, and then come to the din Torah. Because otherwise, yes, without a kiyum, even if the loiva claims that's a valid shtar, we will also, Rav Nachman will also believe him to say that I paid it back. The malva is still holding on to it. We'll talk about it on Amud Beis. There might be cases where the malva holds on to the shtar, whether he's entitled to it or not is another question, but whatever.
Kaimu
shtaraichu, go get the shtar certified. So to go back, Lindsay, to what you were saying, well, we said before, there's five different ways you can do it. Call in the Edim, or call in other Edim to certify their signatures, or compare their signatures with other ones that Beis Din has on a file, or whatever. So to go back to what you were saying before, you were saying that you only need to be Mekayim a Shtar if there was an error. Not necessarily. I mean, here not necessarily is anybody arguing that the Shtar is invalid. Not yet, anyway. But Rav Nachman is telling them, go be Mekayim the Shtar preemptively, and then I'll hear you out. Without that, if the loiva time is that the shtar is invalid for one reason or another, we might have to accept his claim. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, another din in this connection, ha'ima shtar amona hu zeh ein neman. If somebody says, this shtar is a shtar amona, what does amona mean? Means trusting. It means basically that Reuven wrote a shtar saying that I'm borrowing $100 from Shimon, that I borrowed $100 from Shimon on such and such a date. He didn't actually borrow it yet. He wrote this document out as preemptively. He's expecting to go and borrow money from Shimon at some point. So he writes out the shtar that this way he'll have it ready. That this way he can come to Shimon's house one day and collect it anytime he needs. But it's amana. He's trusting Shimon that he's not going to try to collect on it without the loan actually having gone through.
Star is signed, in other words, right?
So the shtar is signed, it's a full-fledged shtar, it's got, you know, but he's claimed, but somebody is claiming now that it's a shtar mana. Ain't a neman, we don't believe him. Yeah. Ain't a neman, we don't believe him. The question is, the kama man, who's claiming that it's a shtar mana? Ilema dekava loiva, is the loiva claiming that? Well, pshita, of course you don't believe him, kol kamine. How can you possibly trust him? Anybody could say that. The Ela Dekama Malva, on the contrary, if you're saying that the Malva is saying, you know what, this shtar is a shtar amana, I think this guy doesn't really owe me $100. Tovar Ela Bracha, Adonai, let him have a bracha, that he's willing to give the guy a break. Why shouldn't we believe him? Ela Dekami Edim, so no, let's consider, is it that the Edim are saying that it was a shtar amana? Well, again, let's consider. What case are we talking about? Do we need these edim to certify the shtar or not? If we have another sample of their signatures on file, so we don't need them, or other edim or whatever, well, of course we don't believe them. Again, we don't have that pesha also, that pesha hitzer. There's no reason we should believe them. And if we don't have any other example, we have to depend on them for the certification. Why wouldn't we believe him? According to Rav Meir, fine, we would say that they're not strong enough to pass the shtar. But according to the Rabbanim, why not? Apesha also apesha hitim. So simon ba'ash. So the simon for the next three amiroyim, which each of the amiroyim gives one of these three parties as one of the as a possibility. Who is it that's claiming as a shtar amana? The three amiroyim are Rava, Abaya, so that's the name of the Aleph, and Rav Ashi, which is the Shin. Not always do they use the first letter of the name for the Simen, because sometimes one of the middle letters, like the Shin of Ashi, sounds much stronger than the end. So Amar Rava, La'olam deka Amar Loiva, yeah, you are in fact talking about the Loiva as claiming it's a Shtar Amana. How could you believe him? I mean, anybody could claim that. The reason we don't believe him is precisely because Rav Huna said, that if he admits he wrote the shtar, you don't believe him to say that then you don't need him. You don't need to certify. You don't believe him to say that he paid, or in this case, that's the shtar amana. In other words, all it is this din is an outcome. It's a corollary of Rav Huna Amar Rav's din. So Tosfos says, in that case, then why did Rav have to say both dinim? And the answer is that he didn't. He said one, and we deduce the other one from it. Chodim kol chaverta. He said one, and we deduce from that that therefore, if the loiva claims the shtar amana, we don't believe him.
Shtar amana, he claims the shtar amana means the shtar.
Means the shtar that was written for the purpose of planning to borrow money, but I didn't actually borrow it yet.
There's no exchange.
Yeah. Abaya, I'm a loyal dama malva. Abaya says you could say that you're talking about that
the
malva. No, there are. There's Adam sign on it, sure.
How can they sign it? Money might have to signing to event that might happen.
According to this, yes, they would be able to. If the Loiva himself is telling them to sign, why not? We'll talk about it in a minute. Not necessarily according to Rav Ashi, but according to Rava, it seems to not be a problem.
So what's the Chiddush if there's Adam?
The Chiddush is that's the Chiddush. It's not really a Chiddush. What we're saying is that this is given what Rav Huna Amar Rav said, that if the loiva admits he wrote a shtar, you don't need to certify it. Based on that, then, if the loiva claims one of the claims the loiva might make to say that this is a partial shtar, he might claim that it's a shtar amana. You don't believe him, just like you wouldn't believe him to say that I paid it. No, that's what we're saying. Of course, no, we're saying kol kamina. We're saying, of course, we don't believe him. Why don't we believe him? Because it's a part of that general rule that moedim shtar shakos vein tzarich l'kaimoi. Abaya says you could be talking about that the malva is saying that the shtar amana. I said before, tovei ol bracha. Why isn't it a good thing that he's trying to forgive the guy his debt? No, he's trying to do a chesed with somebody else's money. Suppose that this malva owes the same amount to somebody else. So he's trying to say that the shtar is no good.
Money, then it's bracha, but not if it's
something else. Right, but not if you can't. Don't be frum on somebody else's cheshbon. So like this, other people are expecting they're going to be able to collect out of that. Now he's not making it possible to. Okay, it happens. He also, you know, he lent the money 10 years ago, and since then, whatever. But it doesn't even have to be that, actually. No, it doesn't have to be that he's destitute. Wait, v'chidur of nasan, because it would be like what Rav Nasan says, the Tanya, Rav Nasan, I mean, na'im anoshe b'chavere mona v'chavere b'chavere. How do we know if Reuben owes Shimon a mona and then Shimon owes Levi a mona? How do we know that we take the money from Reuben and give it to Levi? Reuben cannot come in based in and say, you know what, I never did business with Levi, why should I have to pay him? No. You make him pay him directly. You don't make him pay Shimon, and then Shimon, and then Levi has to go mutzazich in base to get out of Shimon. No, just give it directly to Levi. Thank you. I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, this concept is mentioned in a number of places in Gemara. It's a famous concept called Shibudu de Rav Nasan, the lien of Rav Nasan. That effectively Levi now, even though he's not Reuben's direct creditor, Levi has a lien on Reuben's property because of that. Because Talmud Lomar, because the pasuk says, Shibudu de Rav Nasan, the lien of Rav Nasan, because Rav Nasan is the one saying this thing. Talmud Lomar, because the pasuk says, V'nasan la'asher osham, he should give to the one to whom he's guilty, to the one whom he owes. Not la'asher hilvahu, Rashi says, not the one who lent him. So it means the one who's the ultimate owner of his money. So therefore, so it doesn't have to be that the Malveh is destitute. The Malveh's own creditor is expecting to get this money therefore the middle guy Shimon has no right to say that the shtar is a shtar amana, because by doing that he's preventing Levi from being able to collect the shib from Reuven, and he's making him have to go and collect from him himself, which is a bother. Yeah.
Same in English.
Yeah. So that's that. Rav Ashi Yama La'olam Dekamri Edim. Rav Ashi says a third possibility, that it's the Edim who are claiming it's a shtar amana. And we're talking about that there's no other example of the Ksav Yad on file. So yes, we have to listen to what they're saying. So why don't we say Apesha Asa Apesha Heter? Because Udkamat Amay Le Mehemni, why don't we believe them? The reason is because of Rav Kahana. Because, like what Rav Kahana said, the Amr Rav Kahana, also Lo La Adam Shiyash Shtar Amona, but safe basically, a person is not allowed to keep a Shtar Amona around his house. Mishum Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Al Tashkid Ba'yalacha Avla, don't let unrighteousness stay in your tent, meaning don't let something dishonest be in your house. Ve'omer Rav Sheshes B'reidu Rav Edi, and further Rav Sheshes B'reidu Rav Edi says, Shmamina B'reidu Rav Kana, Edim Sh'amru, Amona O'yud Rav Eino, Einin Emanim. So if the Edim themselves claim that it was a Shtar Amona, we also don't believe them. My timer, Kivin De'Avlahu, because since we're calling a Shtar Amona an Avla, it's an unjust thing, because the Malveh can always, it's very easy for the Malveh to break his word and go claim it as a real shtar. A'avla lechasmi, we should not assume that the Edim signed on something which is an avla. So if they claim we do, again, we're back to the problem of Edon and Mesim Asmei Rosha. They're claiming that we were a shayim. We signed on something illegal, and therefore we can't believe them. Amar Rav Yisro ben Levi also. There's, by the way, this that we're saying that the person is not allowed to keep a shtar amana around his house. This whole Gemara over here, these whole last few lines about shtar amana. There's an interesting thing that Rabbi Melech Lezhensker has in Noyam Ali Melech, a Chassidish Avot, about it. It's a long thing, and I don't remember all of it actually. But he explains basically that a shtar amana in Avodah is a person who's saying, I'm gonna do tshuva. Right now I'm not up to doing tshuva, but I'm gonna do tshuva, and I trust that the Eibishter will accept my tshuva when I do it. No, also the Adam Shiyasha Shtar Amona. Don't keep that Shtar Amona around. Get it done already. Do the tshuva already, rather than relying on the Eibishter to have patience with you. Amar Rav Yisro ben Levi, a similar thing. Also,
any shtar, in other words.
Well, a shtar amona, we're saying.
Any shtar amona. Whether it's mammon or it's something else.
Yeah, it could be, for example, a person could just as well do a shtar amona, for example, about a sale of land, let's say, or a sale of property. Yeah, same idea. So the vort is, first of all, you could have there's no date on it. But second of all, it could be not.
No date on it?
What the Tzion is pointing out is because there's a different issue. In general, you have a rule that a shtar mukdam, a shtar that's predated, is possible anyway. Because what are you going to do with a predated shtar? If you have, we learned about this in Rosh Hashanah, if you have, for example, a shtar dated in Tishrei of Tosh and Hay, and the loan didn't actually take place until Shema, what's going to happen when the guy comes to collect the loan? If the borrower doesn't have what to pay back, he's going to go seize property. He's also entitled to seize any property that the loiva had owned at the time and had since sold. If the thing is predated to Tishrei, meanwhile, he went and sold some property in Cheshvan, and now this lender is going to go collect it, even though he shouldn't, because the loan didn't take place till Shvat. There is, by the way, there's Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos on that. When we say that a Shtam Mukdam is Pasul, do we mean Pasul entirely, that you can't use it, it's considered like Chaspa, it's considered like a worthless Shtar, or is it that you can't use it to collect from Shabadim, from this kind of property that the borrower had and sold to somebody else, but you can still use it to collect the loan itself from Bnei Chodin, from property that he actually has in his possession?
How can you say a Shtar without a date?
Be that as it may, yeah, you could have a Shtar without a date. But whatever.
It's still valid.
It would still be valid. What it is because it doesn't have a date, you can't collect with it from Mishvadim. But you can. It's a valid shtar. You still can take it to Beis Din and say that I'm owed the money. But if you're saying it's a shtar amana, then yeah. Amar Rav Yisro ben Levi, also lo adam shiyash shtar parua b'seich beisei. A person is also not allowed to keep a paid off shtar in his house for the same reason. Mishum shenema al tashkin b'yalacha avla. Don't keep something unjust in your house. And that would be unjust because, again, same idea. You're going to, even, first of all, you may forget and try to collect with it again. Second of all, okay, you'll remember. You have a good memory. What's going to happen after 120? Your heirs take over. They're going to find it. Same problem with the Shtaramana, by the way, is your heirs are going to find it. They're not going to know it was paid off already, and then they're going to go try to collect with it. In the West, in Eretz Yisrael, they said, in the name of Rav, a different pasuk that expresses this idea, the pasuk says, if you have injustice in your hand, get it far away. This refers to a shtar amano, like we were talking about, and a shtar pasim, which is a similar idea. Shtar pasim is one where you write, where you're trying to get the guy to lend you money. You're trying to get the shtar to lend you money. So you say, you know what? I'll write out a shtar as if I already owe you the money. Yeah. Pass the maloshin, like you're trying to be mafias him. You're trying to convince him to convince him to lend it to you. That's a shtar passim, yeah. I'm sorry, you're right. I mixed it up. You're right. Shapisa lahalvas l'shtar, right, I'm sorry. Shtar pasim means that he's saying, I want people to think I'm rich. So let's write out a shtar where it looks like I borrowed from you $10,000, and that way people will think, well, somebody who's able to borrow $10,000 and pay it back must be a rich guy. Don't do that. Val Pashkin, Bayalacha Abla, and the second half of that passage continues. Don't let injustice be in your house. Zeshtar Perua. This refers to a paid off shtar. What's the difference? The difference is Abla means something that to begin with was unjust. The Shtar Amana or Shtar Pasim, when it was written, there was no loan in the first place. So it's unjust to write such a thing. A Shtar Perua is not, a Shtar Perua is out, those are called oven. Those are called like, not just unrighteousness. Oven means like wickedness. Whereas Avla means injustice. Avla refers to a shtar perua. At one time it was a valid shtar, but now it would be Avla. Now it would be an injustice to keep it around because your heirs might end up collecting with it again. So, Manda, so we have two different opinions then.
We don't use the Russian of Shammai. Yachot mina sheker. It's a sheker, basically.
Well, that's what we're saying. You know, Atashkin by like Avla. Don't
more than an Avla.
Okay. Yeah. So, well, that's what we're saying. You're not allowed to keep it around in your house. So now, okay, so we had Rabbi Shulman Levi learning that he said that Avla refers to the paid-off shtar. Then we have Rav who said that, no, the paid-off shtar, that the paid-off shtar is called Avla, but he also added that the oven refers to shtar amano or shtar pasin. So, Manda Amar Shtar Parur, Rabbi Shulman Levi, who says you can't keep around a paid-off shtar, kol shekhen shtar amana. Well, how much more so? Don't keep around a shtar amana, which is something which is invalid to begin with. Where is the opinion that says that you should not have around a shtar amana? Avo shtar parua loy. But he would argue there are cases where it is okay to have around a shtar parua, a paid off shtar in your house. Why? Why? The zimna, the mashi le'apshit to the safra. Because sometimes you may need to keep it around until the loyva pays you for the schar of the sofer. What happens when you come when a guy comes to borrow money? Somebody has to draw up the paperwork. The loiva is supposed to be the one who pays for that. It's supposed to be the one who pays for the shtar to be written. It can happen that the loiva doesn't have enough money for that either. So the malva says, effectively, fine, I'll spot that to you. I'll advance that to you. And when you pay off the shtar, then make sure you include that as well. What? Then you'll pay me back the shtar sofer. So what happens? The loiva came, paid off the shtar, but he didn't pay the shtar sofer. So the argument is, maybe the malva should be able to keep around that shtar until he gets the shtar sofer paid, because otherwise, how is he going to have any proof? So Tosfos says, in fact, that's valid. He is able to do that. He
the shtar
what? Say what?
The sum is written in the shtar, the shtar sofer,
no? Maybe, no, not necessarily. Not necessarily. So what happened?
He was allowed
to keep it for that reason, but then afterwards he forgot. So we can't call it Avla, in other words, is the argument. Now, Tosfos says that. The Ran disagrees. The Ran says that no. He learned the Argamara to be saying that he may have been keeping it around. Doesn't mean he should have been keeping it around. No, you're not allowed to keep a Shtar Perua because of the Shitti de Safra. And the Shach gives a reason. The Alter Rebbe brings it in Shulchan Aruch and in Hilchos Eidos Shtaros or Shlishos. The reason is, you can't keep this shtar around in order to be a proof for a different chayv. The amount that you owe for the pshitta de safra, that's a different loan. Not a different loan, whatever. It's a different chayv. It's a different obligation. You can't keep around this shtar in order to collect on that one. So no, it would be obla to keep it around.
What
are we doing?
To keep for the sofa.
The argument is, the Ran makes the argument, and the Shach explains, that if you're keeping around the shtar in order to get this pshiti de safra, what are you doing effectively? You're keeping around a shtar saying that the guy owes you $100 in order to collect on a different, in order to be able to collect on a different loan of $10. You can't do that.
What the fact that when he paid off this, Mavi must have given him a shovel or some sort of receipt.
So if the shover is written, so the Alter Rebbe explains in Shulchan Aruch, if the receipt is written on the shtar itself, sure, there's no problem to keep it around. Same thing if the shtar is ripped, there's also no problem. The problem is, we're talking about the shtar is still intact and there's no shover on it. Maybe not. We learned the other day the question about whether you give receipts or not,
The Ran says
you shouldn't be keeping around the shtar for that.
Because you can use it for...
Because you could end up using it to try and get the debt itself, not just the pshita de safra. So the Alter Rebbe is both opinions. He says that the Yoreh Shemayim should follow the first opinion, and the first opinion of the Ran, and not keep the shtar around even for the pshita de safra.
Can't you go to the Beis Din and say that... You could, I mean...
But then you're going to have the old same problem again. You need another cipher to write a new shtar. Probably the logical thing to do, yeah, would be to write on the shtar, okay, you know, Reuven paid me back the $100, the actual loan, but he still owes me the $10 for the pshita de safra. Okay, if you do that, then there's no problem. It's both. First of all, not everybody knew how to write. First of all, I mean, you have a lot of things. I'm sure people knew how to write in the sense that they're literate. But first of all, not everybody has a decent handwriting. You know, there are some people whose handwriting looks like doctor's handwriting.
Yeah.
And then shtar is supposed to follow a certain formula. Not everybody knows how to do that. You know, think of it nowadays. When you go and deal with the bank or with any kind of lawyer or whatever, you know, they have reams and reams of a boilerplate. And, you know, the average person doesn't know that stuff. Itmar. So now they said another din that comes out from this pasuk. Sefer she'enim muga, a sefer which is not corrected with its mistakes in it. Amar Rav Ami, ablamad yoyim mutal l'shahayset. 1 second, we'll talk what kind of spartan we're talking about in a second. Rav Ami says up to 30 days you're allowed to keep it around. Mikan ve'elachos l'shahayset, l'shahayset. After that, you're not allowed to keep it around for the same reason. Mishum shenem al tashkin ve'elacha avla, because it's going to lead to mistakes in understanding the Torah. So what kind of spartan are we talking about? Rashi says we're talking about specifically Tanakh. Well, Rashi says Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim. The Rimi Gash says it means only those, because only those are read with Sibur, as a standard thing. So you want to make extra sure that those are free of mistakes, because otherwise it's going to cause problems. People are going to misunderstand the Torah. On the other hand, other Rishonim explain that, no, when Rashi says here Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim, it just means, as a practical matter, in Rav Ami's times, those were the only Sfarim that were written. The Mishnah and Gemara hadn't been written down yet. Okay, the Mishnah, there's different days whether it had been written, but even it was, the average person didn't have a copy of it. The average person has a copy of Torah, Nevi'im, Uksuvim. That was the whole Jewish library in those days. Nowadays, you have the Mishnah and Gemara and Shulchan Aruch and whatnot, yes, and the Sefer Shein Emuga applies to all those, even more so, because you don't pass in halacha from Tanakh, you pass in halacha from Shulchan Aruch. If you're going to have a mistake in there, and it's going to really be, it's going to really cause problems.
It's all the Sfarim Emuga now.
More or less, yeah, but, you know, there's, well, I mean, they still sometimes find mistakes. I actually saw quoted a tshuva that I think it was the Shevet Halevi wrote to Shapsi Frankel. We're all familiar, I think, with the Shapsi Frankel edition of Rambam, where he corrected it based on various manuscripts, and he has all kinds of footnotes in the back. And the Shevet Halevi, I think it was, writes to him that, you know, it's a very good thing that you're doing. It fits with what our Gemara is saying about a Sefer Shein Emuga. But he says that actually the truth is, when you have a Sefer that has been gone over and over, and, you know, so you have, for example, the standard printings of Rambam, I'm sure they have mistakes in them. As much as possible, they've tried to get, you know, it's not like you have, he uses the expression, it's not like you have to go through there with a fine-tooth comb and try to find every mistake. If you find a mistake, yeah, of course, you have to correct it, but you don't have to go start looking through with it and try to find mistakes. Like,
especially
how many mistakes. Yeah. Anyway, an interesting vort that the Bala Turim brings on this. Somebody says, I don't remember who, since the pasuk says al tashkin v'alacha avla, al is gematria 31. That's why we say up to 30 days you can keep it. On the 31st day, you're in violation of al tashkin v'alacha. There's also the idea that a shchuna consists of 30 days, so therefore tashkin means that it would be for 30 days. The Baal HaTorah says a vort that the...
Including Eretz Yisrael.
Well, as far as those are you talking about? Okay, but still, no, Shchuna, when we're talking about the person is settled in a certain place, yeah. But the Baal HaTorah points out that the word Tashkein stands for Torah, Shtar, Ksuvim, and Nevi'im, which are the four things we're talking about over here that you need to make sure are free of mistakes. He also says that that's why you have the expression Ba'alacha. He says it twice in Tanakh. Here you have Al-Tashkin Ba'alacha Avla and Smach Zvulun B'Tetzecha V'Yisacha Ba'alacha because of Tamarach HaChamim who are Ba'alacha. I have to make sure that they don't have Ba'alacha Avla if they don't have mistakes in Sfarim.
You
can
give
it
30 days to correct it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or take them out or do something with that.
Going back to what we said about Ashtar Amana, Amar Rav Nachman, Edim Sha'amar Amana Hoyu Devarenu in Neman, if the Edim claim that what we said or what we wrote on the Shtar wasn't Amana, then we say we don't believe him. But Maida Hoyu Devarenu in Neman, and also if they say that what we said was based, if they said that what we did was based on a Maida, meaning a Maida is that you can have that a person, let's say, you can have that a person is being forced to, for example, sell his field. He doesn't really want to. He wants to have recourse in Beis Din afterwards. So what does he do? Ahead of time, he goes and is Moisa Moida. He makes a declaration in front of Beis Din, or not in front of Beis Din, in front of Edim, saying, basically, I'm only selling this property because I'm being forced to by so-and-so. But afterwards, I want to have the option of going and claiming it back from him in Beis Din. So if the Edim are claiming that this sale, for example, was the sale was based on a Moida, then we also don't believe him.
Same reason.
The same reason, basically, because either way, the reason is because in both what we're doing is we're trying to take something that we're saying about a verbal edus and use it to cancel a written shtar. You can't do that. We said before that the shtar once written nafik mishnechkarei dusin rebeis din. It's the equivalent of an edus that has already been cross examined. They're saying verbally that's no good. The seller is making the Majah, yeah. The Edim are the ones coming and saying, you know what, the Shtar was based on a Majah. Sure, if the seller himself comes to Beis Din and wants to activate his Majah, sure, we'll believe him. He has to bring the Edim for that purpose. But if it's only the Edim themselves who are volunteering that information, Rav Nachman says we don't pay attention. On the other hand, if they say, because then we said before, then they're declaring themselves a Rishayim, that they signed on something which is an Avla. But if they say, but if they say that it was a Majah, then we do believe him. My timer, high nitin likasev, high low nitin likasev, because the case of the shtar amana, it shouldn't have been written. We said before, it was considered oven or avla or whatever, it shouldn't have been written in the first place. This document of sale, they had a right to be signing on it. The fact is, the sale was being done, even if it was under duress. It had a right to be written. So therefore, we can accept that they're not declaring themselves rishayim by that. So, what about a third possibility? What if the Edim say that, yes, we've signed on the Shtar, yes, there was a sale, but it was al Tanai. It was on condition that he does such and such. We didn't see that the Tanai was fulfilled. And now the buyer and the seller are arguing whether the Tanai happened. Do we believe the Edim? Do we say Majav Amon Ahainu Taimer to Ka'akrile L'Shtara? Do we say, you know why you don't believe him? Rav Nachman had said you don't believe him on either Majav or the Amona to Ka'akrile L'Shtara because they're uprooting the whole Shtar. In either of those cases, they're claiming that the Shtar is no Shtar. Well, not really in the case of Majav, they're not saying no Shtar, but they're saying the whole sale needs to be voided. And in the case of Amona, that there wasn't even a sale or a loan or what have you. Well then, V'hai Nami Ka'akrile L'Shtara. Well, in that case, over here, when they say that there was a Tanai, again, they're trying to cancel out the whole Shtar, because again, how can you accept their Edus Alper against what's written in the Shtar? There's no Tanai written in the Shtar. Oy Dilma Tanai Milta Achrisi. Or maybe you would argue the Tanai is a separate thing. You would argue that the Shtar is a valid Shtar. There was a Tanai. So they're giving a separate edus. It happens to be that it affects the validity of the shtar, but that's a side effect of it.
And therefore,
maybe we should believe him. Amalei, so Rav Nachman tells him, well, he also among the dina, when people come to a din Torah and there's such a case where there's a claim that there was a tanai, amin and lahu, then we tell what I do is I tell the owner, I tell the seller or the buyer, whoever it was, zilu kaim tanai hu chosul dina, go fulfill the Tanai. There's a claim that there was a Tanai. Good, go fulfill the Tanai, and then come to Beis Din. So yes, in other words, what does that mean? We are accepting that the Edim can say that there was a Tanai. And we'll tell them that then we'll tell them on that basis, well, then go fulfill it.
Which means what?
Which means that if they don't, then the shower is bottle. Then we'll accept that the shower is bottle. How about another case? What happens if among the Edom themselves is a disagreement? One aide claims that I heard them giving a tnai, the other aide didn't hear any such thing. What do we do? I'm going to pop up. Well, the fact is you have two of them who are giving aiders that it is a valid shtar. And one of them is claiming that there's a tnai. Well, that's one aid. You can't accept one aid against two. So therefore, we dismiss his claim.
Of the tnai.
Of the tnai.
But not the shtar.
No, we don't dismiss the shtar. We, on the contrary, we say the shtar is valid without the tnai.
That's right.
But by that logic, you should say the same thing even if both of them say that there was a tnai. Again, you're back to the question that we said before, that once their testimony is written in the shtar that there was a sale and didn't say anything about tnai, how would we believe them to cancel that and say that there was a tnai? Ella, the difference is, I'm reading Hani Lameka Sadu Sayokasu. No, we're saying that when they say, again, remember, they had said, we're talking again, according to Rashi, Toshkede Dibur. They say, this is our signature, but there was a tnai. So, and why do we believe that in that case? Hani Lameka Sadu Sayokasu. Both of them are coming to cancel their eders, and we accept that on the basis of a Pesha Asa Pesha Hidr. Well, Hainami Lameka Sadu Sikai. So then, if one of them says it, he's canceling out his eders. So then you have a shtar that has one aid. So you have only one aid in the shtar. It's not a good shtar. If we accept both of them being able to do that, then we should accept one of them being able to do that. And indeed, the halacha is like Rav Huna Ben Rabbi Yehoshua, that indeed we allow one aid to say that, and we will accept, therefore, that the shtar is possible on that basis.
Just because they disagree on the tnai.
Because one of them said, the Sechid Dibur, that there was a tnai.
The other one says no.
And the other one says no. Yeah.
That the whole shtar is gone.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.